So the genius of the Adepts of the Kabbalah has been to devise forms which can be used as indicating symbols of the particular forces concerned. So a mighty and complex system of living imagery has been built up around the central glyph of the Tree of Life. And generations of students through hundreds of years have used and meditated upon this root system of metaphysical symbolism. This has built up in the astral light what may be termed the egregore of the Tree of Life. And the egregore is a word that means that the soul, the composite, he says it's a composite living soul of which the glyph of the tree is the physical body. Those who work with the tree come into sympathetic relationship with this egregore and may gain from it by a species of telepathic action light on their present-day problems and knowledge of the inner realities which transcends that which they could reach without such assistance. All magical operations, when carried out by those who have been trained in the schools of the Kabbalah, are based on and utilize the store of images in the egregore of the tree. All astral forces which may be used in such magic have their own symbolic personifications in that group of associated images. And by consciously working with those representative images, the forces of which they have an expression are therefore contacted. Since the level of mind which deals with such images is the so-called subconscious mind, it is an axiom in magic that it is the subconscious mind, and this is the imagination he's really talking about here, which is the magical agent, while the conscious mind is the directing and the controlling factor. Thus, all magical operations by the personal consciousness are indirect. The actual operation is performed by the subconscious level of mind working through the appropriate images. This is one of the most important laws of magic. As the reader will see at a later stage, it is possible to make our own tree. In fact, we must do so if we're to do any real work with the system. But this does not mean we should blindly accept the classifications handed down to us from the more ancient brethren. In this matter, we should be ourselves originators. It must be remembered, with the increasing knowledge, there's so much a feature of our present times, we're talking 1959, there are so many new avenues of thought which are closed to our predecessors. And from those new thought images, we may construct what might be termed an up-to-date tree of life. Indeed, it is necessary that we should do this. But the true apprentice of magic learns also to follow the example given in the New Testament of the wise householder who brings forth from his treasure house things old and new. Although our forefathers were ignorant of much that is elementary knowledge to us, they still had keen minds and still encountered the same basic problems that perplex and worry their clever descendants of today. In the established system of relationships, which is the Tree of Life, they found a key to open the door of wisdom. And their meditations, therefore, have built into the soul of the tree much that has a value today. So when we make our very modern tree, it is well to realize that if we, in this way, make our contribution to that group thought form, it, in its turn, can work through the archaic images within our deeper minds. The glyph of the tree may be used for meditation purposes and also as a plan upon which practical, objective work may be done. But these two aspects of work upon the tree, we may turn them the subjective and the objective aspects, use slightly different diagrams, different in colour because the method of using the forces in meditation is different from using them in practical magical work. Careful study of the books written upon the Tree of Life will enable the student to use the tree in its different colour scales. And for this reason, we will not here give detailed instructions. There's all kinds of books saying this means that colour. But actually, use a basic set of colours, but then create your own, which is kind of what we've been doing here today. When using the glyph of the Tree of Life, whether for meditation or for magical purposes, it's important to remember the system symbols must be used systematically in accordance with their functional relationship. For this relationship is of the very essence of the tree. And as we've already pointed out, the tree is a diagram of relationships. It's also advisable to work with opposites. For example, meditation or magical operations using the sphere of Mars should be followed by one using the symbolism of Jupiter. In this way, a balanced development is assured, and we are told that equilibrium is the basis of the great work. The student will have perceived that the Tree of Life is a stupendous mnemonic system, a system which makes use of the natural modes of action of the conscious, subconscious, and superconscious levels of the soul. He may therefore ask, why shouldn't we make up a tree of our own and use it for autosuggestive purposes? Why bother with the symbolism of the past? It is quite possible, as we've said, to make such an up-to-date tree, but as we already possess in our deep unconscious all the archaic symbols of the racial past, we may as well use them in our conscious work, thus linking our conscious and subconscious mental levels. Since the appeal of any system of suggestion is to the subconscious, it's evident that a system that uses the archaic symbols will be far better able to affect the subconscious levels, since it speaks in their language rather than an arbitrary conscious symbol system could do. We come now to a very important point. When we study various forms of musical instrument, we find there's a clear division into two classes. In the one which includes the piano, the organ, various woodwind instruments, the notes are already made for the musician. He depresses the keys of the organ, the stops of the woodwind, and the corresponding musical notes are sounded. The second class, which is composed of the stringed instruments, the musician makes his own notes by his fingering. That is, he shortens or lengthens the effective vibratory length of the string, thus causing it to emit chosen notes when put into vibration by the bow or plectrum. When working with the tree, we are in the position of the musician of the second class. We first learn how to produce the right psychic notes as required. This is done by using the symbols of the tree as objects in our meditation. Unless we've done this properly, our magic will usually be ineffective. So in our meditation, we take the various symbols of the tree and consider them in their true aspects. Two aspects. For all of these symbols have two sides to their nature. There is the form side, the actual pictorial symbol itself, and there is the force side, the energy of which the symbol is an expression. In building up our symbol system in meditation, we learn to link deliberately and consciously a symbol with its appropriate force and become so expert at it that the mere fact of the symbol arising in consciousness brings with it a surge of emotional energy of the type associated with that symbol on the tree. Equally, we must be able, by opening ourselves to a certain aspect of emotional energy, to perceive inwardly with the mind's eye the symbol which represents that energy. In this technical meditation work, the linking up of the astral energies with their corresponding forms is best done by building a fantasy scene based upon the emotional significance of the symbol. The more clearly the fantasy is built, the more closely you come into contact with the energy concerned. This is one aspect of the work. The complementary aspect is developed by consciously linking the symbol with the energy by meditating upon the emotional charge behind it, and then allowing various emotional states to develop within our own minds, visualizing the appropriate symbol forms at the same time. After steady practice on this, there will come a time when the mere thought of the emotion will throw up into the waking consciousness the symbol form concerned. When this has been attained, we began to work with the alphabet of a new language, and we learn to put together the various energized symbols in such a way as to build up what might be described as the language of the mysteries. This form of psychic training is one of great value and has the advantage of being under the control of the waking self. It will be seen then that steady, a prolonged meditation on the tree is necessary if any practical use is to be made out of it. It may be also be pointed out, since all the manifold objects of physical life can be placed on their appropriate level in the tree, that the relationships existing between the various sphere groupings will gradually build up an innate philosophic system within the mind of the magician. This process is assisted by the use of what are known as seed meditations. Now, what we have been doing in looking at the name Yud-Heh-Shin-Vav-Heh, in relating to the angels, relating to the holy living creatures, the journey to the inner sanctuary, is in a way a constructed set of images that have that hold the intention of bringing us into relationship with the these deep impulses that arise from the Kabbalistic tree of life. This idea that we looked at in the Renaissance of the relationship between the divine human being and the soul of the world, and acting as a link between these two great ideas. The other thing that we have done in the very brief meditations we do, these are part of the seed meditations that Ernest talks about, where very swift meditations and then the swift images are perceived and not worked with in that longer sort of dwelling on it kind of way, but seeds that are just put in a way into the kind of field of our personal life, so that they will at a future point emerge with new energy, new ideas connected to them. The work that we've been doing around the diagram of the tree, around the images of the tower, is exactly that kind of work of making these conscious links. It's a sort of kind of laborious, but it's also sort of interesting. And what you start to see as you engage with it, is you start to see the tree talking back to you. You get interested in different things, different aspects appeal to you, or something feels confusing, and that draws your energy. In a way, that's that kind of feel like soul of the tree communicating with you. The problem, obviously, with doing this over 2 days and sort of even 3 sets of 2 days is that we're plunging deeply into something, working very intensely on it, and then we vanish out again. And obviously, as I was saying earlier, I realised that in 6 days I can give you a certain number of keys, really, which if you pursue yourself, will certainly bear a lot of fruit, I hope. But obviously, I can't deal with the whole thing. There's lots more the process that we've begun in these two weekends is a process that needs a lot of continuance, really, a lot of a patient, slow kind of work, and probably a lot more explanation than I've had the time to give. But anyway, what I hope you've had from last weekend and this weekend is a kind of a feeling for the tree and some particular ways of working with it, which you can take in whatever direction you want to, really. And as I said earlier, in the final workshop in June, we will look at the deeper end of the tree and look at how that applies to the rest of it in some ways. And this way, in a way, it's called the footsteps of the fool, because the fool is, the fool is this great kind of tarot image that really is about mysteriousness, non-duality, stepping into the unknown, and that, in a way, will be the sort of guiding image, really, of that third weekend. The key thing with it, however, is to just let things settle in yourself after the last, during the next week. You've done a lot of work these 2 days. And just see what draws your interest. Can't remember if I mentioned last time, but if you want a book to read on it, there's a good book by Will Parfitt called The New Living Kabbalah. Or is it called The New Living Kabbalah? What is it called?
Is that the one you gave us for the first time?
I did, yes. So some of you already got that. But there are loads of books on the Kabbalah, and Will's one is quite useful. He's a good writer, and it's quite it's a good aid memoir somewhere. There's lots more complicated books, but it you don't really want that. What you want is something that can just kind of remind you. The other thing to remember is I gave you last time that chapter from the book that Penny and I wrote called Unlocking the Tree. So if you're getting confused about it at all, just read through that. That's a good background kind of structure. And But the key thing is in this, some of the stuff that Ernest was talking about at the end, that you start to assimilate, just like we've been doing, you start to assimilate the imagery, the thinking, the ideas behind it, not just in a sort of mental way, but in a sort of felt sense way in particular, feeling your way into the tree. And in a way, to try and kind of make it your own tree. In particular, have a look at, keep the coloured in diagrams you've done, because they're your work in a sense. They're literally the bits of the tree you're taking away with you. Go back to the tarot cards and play with them. Lay them out in the tree So I suppose if there's two things I would recommend you do. One is to follow the sanctuary meditations and keep working with them. And the other would just be to play around with the tree, like we've been doing with the tarot. And see what happens. Take that kind of playful approach. And we've got 2 months before we meet again, so the more you're able to do that, the more you'll be prepared for the last workshop, where we can kind of see, well, okay, what is your relationship to this thing? Is it working for you? Is it not? What's happening? How can I help you? That will be one of my questions, really.
Did you do the standing today? Positions.
We didn't, no. We may do that next time. Although actually it'll be quite difficult to do that next time, because there's more of us here next time. I was going to do the standing, but Helena dropped out, and then because it kind of needs me to. The exercise wasn't going to work because Helena wasn't here. It looked like a perfect thing, because it needed me on the outside directing you all. So it needed 11 people in the room, and suddenly we didn't have that. So that is literally why we didn't do the standing.
What a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. I'd have quite enjoyed doing it, but it wouldn't have worked with me as part of it. I'd have to be trying simultaneously inside and outside, and that would have disturbed it really.
We could do it on the residential course.
We could do it on the residential course. Oh, that one, okay.
It's a lie,
isn't it? That's the beginning of the 4-year course, isn't it?
And then we all become adept.
You do. It'll be excellent. Oh, dear.
I'll be 80 by the time we finish it.
By that time, you'll have found how to make out the. You'll have discovered how to make the Philosopher's Stone and become immortal. So that'll be handy. So, just got 10 minutes left, guys. Anything else that's on people's minds, or anything else you want to finish off?
I'm just saying, I better go now, then you can sort of wind up more slowly.
Yes, I'm a bit anxious about you. Go, go and catch your bus, lovely.
Bye, everyone.
Take care, lovely.
Bye.
Yeah, I'll see you in June.
Good luck in Belfast.
Did
nothing horrible happen?
Belfast is a fantastic place, isn't it? Yeah.
How many
is
here at the next workshop?
How many have
you got for the next workshop?
It's about the same as the first workshop. There's about 14 of us, 15 including me, I think, so room at maximum, so it's I think that's right here. Yeah, that's why the 10 definitely won't work. There'll be no room, literally no room for that, really.
Bye-bye,
Mazzella. Take care.
5 minutes to get out the door.
You didn't have a coat, did you?
I've got a coat, yes.
Okay. Shoes?
I've got all sorts of things that I meant to drop off on the way I forgot to do, so I've got boxes and egg boxes.
Thank you.
Sorry, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, lovely. Take care. It's a good flight. So let's just see if there's anything else just before we finish.
what it says is about engaging with the emotion of the imagery.
Yeah.
It's very, very important.
Yeah. Well, you're using, in a sense, the two sides, aren't you? You're using, because if you like, the in Hode, you have the kind of the mental image, but in Netzach, you have the emotion, you have the feeling, and it's interesting, you see, the way the lower part of the tree works, when it's working really well, is that you bring together the fiery feeling or intention that is in Netzach with an image, which then acquires substance and a living quality in Yesod, because that's the place of vitality, the place of something coming to life. But that then is earthed and embodied in Malchut. Now that is directed, of course, by the sphere of the angel, which is in itself directed by deeper aspects of ourselves. And in a way, what happens, I suppose, when the tree works together like that, is both Netzach and Hode open up, and so that Hode becomes a clarity and a clear intention. Netzach opens up into the compassion of Hesed, so the feeling nature is held in this larger pool. So as well as the direct intention of the angel descending into the pool, you've got these background qualities of compassion and clarity that are holding it in a wider kind of field. And then this is really the territory of the next workshop. May as well name it. The next thing that happens as we get used to working in that way, and more, what tends to happen is our center of awareness starts to focus less in that lower triangle of thought, emotion, and memory and feeling, and more in that place of witnessing presence, which is Tiferet. As our center of gravity starts to shift inwards, because it isn't really up, it's more in. So your gravity shifts inwards. You become less. You become kinder and clearer, and in some ways more straightforward. But you also start to connect more deeply and directly into the deeper aspects of the soul, which operate in a sort of a non-dual way. And that's a massive shift. That's a place where you start to see, experience everything as profoundly connected. And the literal experience of feeling at one with the universe, not just in a generic way, but in quite a specific way, so that the book and you are both expressions of the creativity and the love of the universe, both with their own intrinsic divinity shining through, and that as a felt experience. So that's, in a sense, the places that we come to as that deeper aspect of the soul starts to manifest. Now there, however, you know, it's a big thing to shift, from the dynamics of the first triangle of the tree into the place of stillness and presence and witnessing. It's even a much bigger thing to be able to bridge into the deeper aspect of soul. So they have this poetic way of describing it. One is breaking through the veil of the temple, that's the first one. But the second one is the bridging of the abyss, and it's the abyss between duality and non-duality. You know, so there's what the Kabbalists would absolutely say, that our deepest sense of ourselves, the deepest is this non-dual radiant presence that enables us to manifest will, but deep will and deep imagination through the mystery of the deep body, the unconditioned aspect of body. And in a way, that's the direction of the work, in a sense. Now, in reality, we touch these things, we fall down, we touch these things, we fall down. But in that repetitive alchemical process of going round and round, our locus of presence shifts inwards, getting a little bit deeper each time.
And as a way of keeping us on course, because one can't meditate, you know, all the time.
No, of course not. No, no, totally not.
Do you think conscious practice of gratitude is a good way of keeping...
It's definitely one way to do that, because it's sort of, because resentment,
it's sort of stilling and witnessing, isn't it?
It is, and in a certain sense, it challenges the sort of resentment that can build up in our system quite easily.
And the dual, while we're seeing things in reality.
I mean, classically, the thing that you do with the Kabbalah is to have a daily practice, which is. Can be quite simple, so that you, at the very simplest thing you could do is, if you wanted to, is just contemplate the Yud Heh Shin Vav Heh and chant for 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day. The key thing is to do something that is easy, that you can keep up. Or it could be contemplating the tree, or it could be doing a brief version of the sanctuary meditation.
Calling the angels
into the room with you, so any of these things are possible. Any of these things are possible, but the key thing is to do something easy that you can sustain. Because the big problem, particularly when doing workshops like this, is we try and take on too much, and then can't sustain it, and then feel a bit crap, and then just stop doing it. So the key thing is if you want to take this further, is to take something simple, something that appeals, and stay with it, and see what, make notes on it, so you have a sense of what's happening to you, and then see what's happening. Let's just sit at the end, so let's just sit for a few minutes. And,
At the end, could you write the chant on there for me so I can copy it down?
Yeah. I'll do it now. There you go. And we'll end just by doing that. Just by doing the chant. Okay, so let's just chant Yud Heh Shin Vav Heh once more together. Yud Heh Shin Vav Heh. Yud Heh Shin. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.